Okay, so we'll get started. I'll first ask if there are any announcements. Well, I have. Go ahead, Scott.
Well, I was going to mention that, and I actually get Tom's last name. We've added a new presentation for October the 20th, also part of the Energy Action Month. So we'll actually have three presentations next month. And Tom, and I can't remember Tom's last name, it starts with a T, he's going to present on a book he's working. He's a librarian, and he's working on a book on government resources for teachers, I think grades 7 to 12, and with a focus on climate stuff. So he's going to do a presentation on the 20th, and that's in addition to the two other presentations, one on...
Say again what his book is. What is he's talking about, a book he's writing, or...?
I've actually put the material up on our on the website. I'm just trying to get there quickly. I should have brought it up at the end of it. But it's a resource book that he's working on. It hasn't been published yet, so he's actually going to give a little sense of the themes, I guess how he's collecting information and actually asking also for some resources. So that's a new addition to our schedule.
And a resource book focused on climate or on energy?
It is on climate, I believe.
Okay. Great. Yes. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. So that's coming up on the 20th.
The other thing I wanted to make sure everybody is aware of is that we sent out the link to the Climate and Energy Literacy Stakeholder Survey yesterday. The survey will be open for 3 weeks. And this time, we did a survey in 2013 of just the Clean Network members. This time, we sent it out to the Clean Network members, but then also much more broadly to get a better sense of what that broader community looks like out there. And if you've gotten an email and you'd like to pass it on to other significant climate and literacy stakeholder communities that you know of, you can use the text, or you can ask me for the text from the email that I sent to non-Clean Network members, because it sort of gives a little bit more background about the Clean Network. And you can forward that on. So it should be interesting to see what the results will be, what the outcomes of that will be. And we'll certainly have a teleconference when that describes the results of that survey. Some of it will be comparative to how the Clean Network has evolved since 2013, but then how that looks and then how the larger community looks. And there's a significant component of the survey on collective impact, which looks to me like, just looking at this, the Chapter 8 and 9 of the NEEF report, a lot of the bottom line recommendations sort of tie into the components of collective impact. So we can get to that later. But anyway, please make sure at least you yourselves fill out the survey and provide us that feedback. And if you're so inclined to forward it on to others, please do that. Any other announcements?
Hi, this is Jessica Brunicini with the Polar Partnership, the Polar Climate Change Education Partnership. And I was wondering if anyone else in the group was able to participate in this past weekend's Climate Game Jam? And if not,
Go ahead.
If not, I'd be happy to share our experience of it.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. Absolutely.
Okay, great. I think Frank Nepal did, but he's not on the phone. So.
Okay.
He is now. Sorry for being late, guys.
Okay, well, there's Frank. Okay, so go ahead, Jessica. You can start first, and if Frank wants to chime in, he can.
Sure. So the Polar Partnership hosted a site at Barnard College this past weekend on Friday and Saturday. We had about 15 people show up. It was a very broad mix of people who had game design experience and people who had climate science experience. They formed four different teams, and within the period of about 12 hours were able to come up with some really interesting and fun and creative and actually very sophisticated game prototypes. some of which focused on sea level rise and how islands in places like the Pacific are affected by what's happening in the polar regions. We had another group focus on how polar bears are feeling the effects of sea ice loss. So it was a really neat experience, and it was run through NOAA with Peg Steffen. We're hoping that we'll have, as a group, some findings about how this model can be effective for engaging a really wide variety of audiences in learning more about climate change and seeing games as effective resources for teaching a broad audience about what's happening across
the world. Were the games that people were proposing, did they talk about the mechanisms that they would deliver? Like, would they be hands-on games, meaning cards and boards, or would they be online games?
So they actually developed physical prototypes of these games in that period of time. So let's see. We had three board game style prototypes and then one online kind of narrative game. So it was kind of wide open to, so just to back up a little bit, this was an event that was happening all across the country, and I think that there wound up being 11 sites spread around, and they all kind of took a different approach. So I think that some of the sites really focused more on online and digital learning, while we focused a little bit more on card games and board games. So I think each site will have kind of a different set of prototypes that they've come up with.
The neat thing is that these all the you could file. This is Stephanie Furman. You could file your games to be part of a national competition, and so people put together a couple minute videos, basically explaining how the game works. The other thing is that it was really fun because it was kicked off with a presentation coming out of the White House, basically. And that was, live streamed to all the sites. And so that was very exciting for our participants to see this, the national aspect of it as well.
Mm-hmm. So just to build on that, the email that Peg put out said that there were 11 different sites this is a different kind of game jam because there were multiple nodes. And one of the things that was noted in our work was that there really isn't a precedent for best practices on a multi-node game jam yet. So we're kind of breaking new ground. We couldn't find any examples where somebody tried to do what we just did. And so there were 11 sites. So it was 8 states and the District of Columbia. The types of sites were elementary, there was 1, high school, 1, museum, science center, zoo, 5, university, 3, and an incubator was 1. And the total number of jammers and the total number of hours was still being collected, but the amount of just sheer creative energy that was coming through this 48-hour intensive game development process was really remarkable. And some of the examples are really quite compelling. But it's a burst of creative energy trying to grapple with all the realities that we talk about in our climate world and our energy world and put it down into a focused, compelling, fun, emphasis on the word fun. We had a really nice keynote by a gentleman in California talking about how to build a compelling game. And if it's not fun, people don't keep going. But, that's a high challenge for us. But I think some people have got some promising, possibilities here.
So you said this was 48 hours. Did each of these last 48 hours, or were each one a different length of time? Because Jessica mentioned the 12 hours.
Mm-hmm. So it was kind of up to each site how long they wanted to run theirs. And from what I understand, for the groups that were mostly focused on K-12 audiences, they actually just had a few hours where they ran the game jam. We decided to have an event that just ran Friday evening and all of Saturday, so from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. And then there were other sites that were actually running it for the entire weekend.
Yep. Mm. The longest was 48.
The logic was what?
The longest was 48, but there were some that were shorter.
Yeah. And this is following the model of the global game jam. So, like Frank was saying, you know, there's not really anything that's been done with combining a game jam with climate change and climate science in particular. But the global game jam is something that's very popular that's been happening for several years. And their model is basically to have, I think it's at least 48 hours, and they actually have people going 24 hours a day. I don't think any of the climate game jam sites were, you know, ready to host something like that. But even within short amounts of time, you really can get some very creative outputs.
That sounds it sounds really exciting. Did the when you said it was modeled after the global game jam, is that topically focused too, or is that more broad, wide open kind of game creation?
From what I understand with the Global Game Jam is that they do have a theme, but they don't tell anyone until pretty close to the event.
It's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how long was this one in the planning, Frank? Do you know?
Well, this was announced, I think it was announced at the December commitments of the climate, the White House commitments in December, if I remember right. It was definitely announced in this August one, but it's been in the works for quite some time.
I think Peg had something more modest in mind, and then when it got announced more broadly, she realized, and a lot of Jessica was involved and others in helping her to kind of scale it up and make it actually happen, because this was not with there wasn't any real funding attached with it.
I don't think there was any funding.
No funding. We had our first call as kind of a national organizing group in December during AGU, actually.
Yep, that's right. I remember.
Yep.
It was right before our workshop, when that call was happening. Or right after our workshop.
Oh, okay. That's great. Is there a thought that this might happen again sometime?
I know that.
I mean, I would hope. I can just speak. I would hope so. I mean, it was really amazing. I mean, Jessica mentioned the diversity of expertise and also people who were involved in it. You know, we were really reaching out beyond the ones that we're usually connecting with this, and the creativity was just amazing. I can't wait to see the other videos because it's real. They're very thoughtful and fun and really engaging. So.
So people created videos, or just the process was videoed?
So for the Polar Partnership site, we asked everyone to create 2-minute videos to kind of introduce themselves, introduce their game, and provide an overview of the game mechanics as well as the learning goals. That was partly in preparation for the national kind of recognition competition. So everyone who participated, like Stephanie was saying, had the option to submit their game for consideration. And part of that requirement was to create these 2-minute videos. So we just decided to have everyone create them because it is kind of a nice product to be able to show, what the outcomes were. So you can actually see the videos. We put them up on our YouTube channel, which is just the Polar Partnership, to get an idea of what the team created at our jam.
I think that one of the things when I was at the CC that it became clear that there was a strong, some of this is an experiment, but I think the way it turned out was it implies further. I think there's a lot of promise here, but obviously there are the people who are involved in this are going to have to kind of look at that and determine how to move forward. I don't think that's happened yet, but I would be surprised if something didn't evolve from this, given the success.
Do you think that some of these things will actually be realized?
Some of the games?
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting is I don't know if all of the sites had an evaluation form or not in the end, but we had our participants fill out an evaluation form, and we asked them the question, do you intend to continue, you know, both working with the people that you met here, but also specifically continuing to develop your game? And the majority of participants said that, yes, they were interested in both of those.
Yeah, well, it would be good to do the same survey in 6 months.
Yeah.
Because I would guess that anybody would say that at the end of a very exciting event, it's just a matter of the reality of it afterwards.
Right.
Well, I think one of the... Go ahead.
I think the success doesn't hinge on whether they develop, whether these teams stay together and they actually develop their game. I think they all really learned, and they indicated this in the evaluation too, they all really learned a lot about it, and I think that they'll carry that experience forward potentially into something else.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Just one other note about it happening again, it was a lot of work. I mean, the second time it wouldn't be quite as much, but it is a lot of work, and so I would hope that it would be funded if it happens again.
Yeah.
Well,
I think this experiment proved that there's a lot of value here. Finding the resources to move this forward, is a proposal that may be what comes out of this. Not independent of the future work of these teams and these connections and these networks and these individuals now assembled in new configurations, focused on things that they didn't know. I mean, I can speak only from my personal experience in D.C., but there were people who were really digging in very earnestly into the challenges of the science and the impacts and the issues and the social interface aspects and trying to earnestly go through this. And I think that it was transformational at some level for them. Where that goes, I think, is worthy of doing this again to see if there's, really value there. But whoever said this needs to be funded, there was a lot of pro bono here, a tremendous amount. And I think that that's encouraging, but, I mean, that's a lot to ask of somebody to do again.
Yeah.
As we all know in this network.
Yeah. Okay. Any other comments or announcements? Okay, so if not, we'll go on to our conversation today. We wanted to build off of the conversation that we had last week around the NEAS Climate Literacy Report. We really had a great conversation about the report last week on how we can work together and what would be useful to build from the NEAS report. And so we thought that this week we might focus a little bit more, and we have people from NEAS on the phone with us to help us in terms of this conversation, but focusing on who might be the, beyond the usual audiences that might would benefit from our engaging with or that benefit from just being aware of and use the report. And the suggestion was that we look at chapters 8 and 9, and I didn't really have time to read them in detail, but the last part of each chapter is a section called The Bottom Line. And one of the things that struck me in reading through these and some of these recommendations with annual tracking systems and support for communication ties really very, very well with the collective impact model, which calls for continuous communications and being able to track progress towards a common agenda or, towards various goals. So I just want to open, with that, I'm going to open the conversation to others who might want to contribute to it. We have Patrick Deavy and Sarah Espinoza from NEAS who are involved with the climate-related activity there and with the report, and Vicki Arthur, who provided a short summary of the report. So there's not actually a lot of us on the phone here, so Go ahead, Frank.
Sarah, do we know Sarah? And are you on the line?
She was on the line earlier.
I'm sorry, I'm here. I was on mute.
Oh, there you are.
And I have to say, I missed the last conversation, so I'm playing catch up a little bit here. But Patrick did fill me in.
So one of the things that I pushed pretty hard on to explore last time was the overlap in the environmental literacy community and the climate literacy community, and because there was some question as to whether or not there should be an effort to create an climate literacy report. My argument is that those communities have tremendous amount of overlap, and so I think that led to a conversation of I think for both environmental and for climate issues, it involves people in all different kinds of professions, in all different fields and all different cultures that need to address this. So I guess the question was more, who are we working with and who is that broader community? And the survey that we just kicked off yesterday is really asking that question also. We ask what people's professions, and in the 2013 survey, which was just focused on the Clean Network members, while the large majority of people were educators and scientists of various ilks, there were 21 different kinds of professions represented then. And so I'm really curious as to what we will see in this current survey. But I think it's worth a conversation about how you can address these issues through this broad interaction of communities. One of the pieces of the report talks about building sustainable communities, and that gets right at the issue of involving all of the decision makers and community members of in individual locations that have to work together. And then I think that's a key part of all of our efforts, and the collective impact model is just a framework to build that on. So anyway, that's my perspective.
This is Vicki. I think on our last call, too, we were entertaining the thought of whether we would add some climate literacy chapters, perhaps, to NEES report to build on that with some specific mm-hmm. climate ed focus.
Right.
And this is Sarah, and Patrick may have shared this last time, but we're thinking about the environmental literacy report as kind of a living document where we can add additional examples and stories, or perhaps go deeper in areas where there's strong interest or need. And so it seems like this might be an opportunity, as you pointed out, Vicki, to go deeper on climate literacy and education, and perhaps even pull out some examples of, climate education today, what's working, and kind of take that approach to going deeper on this topic as a subset of kind of the broad environmental literacy and EE space.
Mm-hmm.
But this is Scott.
Go ahead, Scott.
I think that's a great idea. One of my concerns is to sort of, we had discussed the idea of creating a report that was very much focused on climate education. And my concern is we would replicate much of what's already in the current report. I love the idea of just simply doing an addendum and saying, here's in ways in which this community is very similar to what's going on in the environmental literacy community, and here's differences, maybe lessons that we've learned or lessons we are learning from the environmental literacy community. And we've all been working very closely together for years anyway. It's not as if there's a great gulf between us. We're multiple members in both camps. So I just like the idea of having something that we could do that's, you know, relatively small. I mean, we literally could something, you know, with 5-10 pages or so, and bring that as a contribution to a living document. Yep.
Let me just ask Sarah and Patrick. When you see this as a living document, do you see that people would be, you would be modifying individual chapters, or would a self-contained addendum to it that maybe addresses the different chapters? What would be the most effective way of doing this? Is I would create a separate addendum or individual pieces?
I would be looking at it more as creating separate addenda or kind of white paper type documents, depending on what the focus was, that would be essentially accompanying resources for the environmental literacy report that go deeper on some specific topic. So rather than actually editing the report, we would be developing additional resources that would be available along with the report. Patrick, is that...
And this is really the first opportunity where this has come up. And I think originally when we were talking about Alive, it was for keeping it alive in a web format, an interactive format. Addendums hadn't really come up as a topic, because we also wanted to be careful about not going too deep on any things. There are so many things in the report. You know, there's probably 20 or 50 things that we can go deeper on. Climate is such an important, current, front-of-mind topic that it would be one of those in which an addendum would be appropriate, as opposed to another venue online where we would share successes and challenges that and best practices that people are doing. This would be deeper than that. This would be a level that we hadn't considered before. And so there are some challenges to that, in that we would want to do an addendum that fits the tone of the report itself. We would also have to identify some funding for this as well. The Forest Service funded the original environmental literacy report in its full structure. And we hired a writer, and they hired researchers, and so we would need to identify some sources of funding for it, but it would be smaller sources, since it would be an addendum and not a full report in and of itself.
Right.
Go
ahead, Frank.
On that exact point, I think one of the ways to accelerate that is if we clearly understand what all the costs are. You know, there's two ways to cover that. There's the in-kind, and then there's the actual cost. And we want to treat everybody as professionals, but if there's ways to accelerate the work through, if there are in-kind contributions that can be made, let's do them. But if there are actual costs to treat people as professionals, let's identify them and find them. But that's way brings the price tag down even a little bit further without, you know, just doing it all pro bono.
Yeah, and the fact that this network exists and that you all have expertise in climate and know kind of the things that are going on from a research perspective and current topics and trends, that's helpful.
I think that in terms of identifying examples, we really know a lot of that through the Clean Network already, but the survey that we've just put out will help identify others that we can then approach. Those if we see one that we want to talk to a bit more, we could use those.
Yeah. Now, another issue that I thought of as we were talking about climate education today, Sarah, if I'm incorrect on this, please let me know, but there are so many professions that are looking for information on this impact them, but they're also looking for information on how to talk about it in a way that, and not be shut out by the word climate. So I'm wondering if, not just in education, but in communicating it properly or in a way that helps that education get through to the audiences that they're talking to.
So just on that point, there is a robust community focused on the communication side of the equation that, you know, I think we'd need to do a careful offset between that side of the equation and what's really on the education side, just because usually we slip very quickly into the communications modalities, and that's where a lot of our stakeholder constituencies, they go after, you know, media and newspaper articles and things of that nature very quickly, and they forget about the education side. It's just the natural trends of things. And I think that making sure that we do justice to the education side is really an important aspect of this work. And just because I think another table setting piece of this conversation that I struggle with in the report is the distinction, and we talked about this last week a little bit, but I think I have a strategy for it, but the difference between environmental literacy and environmental education. Mm-hmm. And maybe I think a wider frame is, you know, educating about the environment versus environmental education, I think, or education for environmental literacy versus environmental education. I still think that some of the terms, some of these what's it called, the building, the end of the chapter, they're very inclusive and expansive, and sometimes they're narrowing. And it's, you know, it's like this, there's a field issue, because EE policy isn't only is narrowing than education policy for environmental literacy. Am I making sense, guys?
Go ahead.
I would say no, Frank. This is Vicki, because kind of reminds me of this circular discussion around is environmental education the same as interpretation, and you know, mm-hmm. who the heck cares in the end? I think you could get stuck in that kind of stuff. So, you know, I think this is the same.
Vicki, the problem is there's an issue here. Because when I was a biology teacher, I was not an environmental educator. I was a biology teacher. Mm-hmm. And there are a bunch of biology teachers that don't really focus on the environment very much.
True.
But they could, and the new standards are asking them to do it. But I think, you know, there's a self-identification part of this, and there's are you actually contributing to environmental literacy? Or are you just doing STEM or biology, or what are you doing? And are we actually contributing to...
Frank, are you talking, like we sometimes talk about integrating climate literacy into all of the disciplines that are relevant, which is most of them? Are you talking about
right.
the same kind of thing for environmental
yes.
literacy? Yes, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think that is the ongoing issue, integrating it into chemistry classes and physics classes and so forth.
And social sciences and English and arts
mm-hmm.
and
right.
and civics and, you know, the whole, as soon as you do this, because, I'll be very clear with this. There are people when they hear environmental education, and I'm going to the Blue Sky Funders Forum, and this exact conversation is happening there. We're not just talking about, you know, environmental education centers, where kids go for once a year and they go do a one-day activity and then that's done with environmental education for the year. I don't mean any disrespect, but I think you guys get what I'm getting at. This is much
yeah.
bigger than what a lot of people think, and we have to be careful with the language to make sure that they get we're talking about really big, substantive initiatives, not something small done one day in sixth grade.
And
for clarification,
may I ask, are you also talking about more than information transfer? Are you talking about skill building and
absolutely.
And developing affective
yes.
qualities and so forth?
Certainly, certainly in the formal education settings, absolutely. But I think that it's also true in the... In the broader community where we need people to be able to make effective decisions. And so this is where it gets harder in terms of when you say education, people a lot of times will naturally fall into the formal, informal education venues and not think of the need for that kind of training, professional development, or whatever you want to call it, for professionals in all different aspects who have to make decisions that affect their communities, the environment.
Yeah, and at the core of it, I think that's what distinguishes environmental education.
Well, but not
it distinguishes environmental education from what?
From some of the popular misunderstandings of what environmental education is, as opposed to it just being education about the environment, which I think is a very limited information transfer kind of definition.
Mm-hmm.
Completely
agree.
And
I don't think that's accurate for the field of environmental education.
But to that exact end, I think we need to ensure that. I think that the language in the report, I think this is why I'm making the case for the addendum in why I'm thinking this, is that as we go forward in this, exactly what we're talking about here, and I think we're getting closer to a common understanding, that's what we have to do in the addendum as it relates to a topic like climate. And, you know, and if we capture that well, and where are the successes and really what we're talking about, then I think we're in good shape. But I think the report, it kind of gets the pieces of it, but not all the way there. And I think that's making the case for the addendum.
So let me say from a neat perspective, we define environmental education and environmental literacy on and the distinctions between the two. For environmental education, we use the traditional UNESCO definition developed in 1976. For environmental literacy, the last paragraph, first part, 7, we define it for these for this report.
Can you say where it was again? I couldn't quite hear you.
You're breaking up.
Yeah, I'm having trouble. Well, there's some kind of static going on over the phone. So they define, I don't know how much you heard or didn't hear, but we define environmental literacy and environmental education on page 11 of the report. We use for environmental literacy traditional UNESCO definition. And for environmental literacy, defined in the third paragraph in the column. For NEPA, so that those are the definitions of the report itself. For NEEF, environmental literacy is not just formal education, but it goes into informal education. It goes into employer workplace. It goes into areas that people don't traditionally think of environmental education going. So those are the parameters around which we worked with that Frank is addressing.
Gotcha.
And that is very much the way the climate literacy essential principles were, in terms of the audience it wanted to reach, was beyond just formal and informal education, basically citizens.
That's right.
So my just Vicki and my theme with this group is going to be we're not even in the questions that Frank is asking, we're not starting from scratch on any of this. You know, there's definitions for all of this, as Patrick's pointing out. People have thought long and hard about that question already. But I think second layer of what I want to say is that even in terms of writing up a climate literacy addendum, a lot of the writing that we've already done for our interagency group, working group, would probably fit for what we're talking about. I'm sure there's things to make it cohesive and all, but we've done, my point is we've done a lot of writing about where we are and where we think we need to go. We've done a lot of that already.
Can you share that or not?
Do you agree, Frank?
I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, we can definitely share this, but I think where we are going, actually, I stand corrected. Let me check. And it's dated. You know, what Vicki's referring to is dated.
Yeah,
I believe the one you're referring to, Vicki, is.
But it was an interagency.
Absolutely.
It was a conversation,
yeah.
Or a document.
Document. It's an interagency document, and that same document is due to be updated by December of next year, which is setting forth the priorities and needs for the interagency climate education space for the next administration. That's what that document's for. It happens at the transition phase of administrations. But I think it's a really interesting question. But to think about the difference between environmental education and literacy as defined in this document and what we're trying to achieve with our focus on climate and global change, they're very much aligned. And I think it behooves us to see whether or not there is a compelling case to be made for an addendum. And if there is an addendum, exactly what is the addendum doing that this document doesn't already do? And maybe, Vicki, what you've done with your pulling out of this document with the focus on climate and then looking at that, what's not there that our community, our networks, our field have that needs to be supplemented? I think that's the setting up the charge.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's an open question.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I guess what's missing is the specifics of some of the things we just were tossing around, like, you know, what ages, what do we want the climate literate person to know? Well, we've done that work, right? We've got the literacy
Absolutely.
Principles, and we should just be, like, finding places to weave that into the overall environmental literacy picture, because if they aren't one in the same, they ought to be today.
Well,
that's
I think that's an area I think we really need to explore, and it would be really helpful, I think, to have that document that you've been referring to and read and look through that, even though it needs to be updated, in the context of the NEEF report, and look at exactly where there are differences, and I don't want to even call them differences. They're just where they extend beyond each other, and where they are aligned. Because I think that might help us make a stronger case for support.
Yeah, and outline what we have in mind.
Mm-hmm.
I think the if I was going to zoom in to frame this conversation a little bit more constructively, looking at the bottom lines for Chapter 8, they're really interesting, and they're very much in line with a lot of the work we've been doing as a community in the past couple of years. But there are some interesting nuances. The next to last bullet, you know, increased support to hire policy specialists at key organizations to help promote state, local, and regional and national EE policy efforts. I think that's a spot where there's been a narrowing in the context of what we think about. Now, maybe we don't all agree on that, but I mean, the people who are doing that policy analysis, would they be thinking about the expanse of what we're talking about, or would they be thinking about something smaller? That's an open, I don't know.
So you think that last, so Frank, you think that last bullet is much more specific and narrowing of
sure,
the conversation?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the environmental literacy plans that a lot of states are coming up with, I think you might say that those are not very focused on the pressing reality of climate. It's missing the mark, given what we have before us as a nation. And I think that's an open question. I don't know if that's fair, but I think that's been my experience. Does anybody have any response to that?
Oh, I'm not sure. I have to think about it.
Frank, are you saying that you? I'm on page 83 of 102. I assume that's the same page you're on, right?
The bottom line, it. Chapter 8.
Yep, that's it.
Page 83. Yes.
And what I'm wondering, Frank, is whether you're saying that you disagree with the notion of increasing support for communication efforts or the intensity of that statement.
I'm the bullet right above that. Increase support to hire policy specialists. It's specifically at the end of it. I agree with everything there. Where I start seeing this fall apart in the context of our conversation is the EE policy support, including obviously increasing support for environmental education. You know,
why does that bother you?
Because, I mean, I appreciate the definition from UNESCO in 1976, but the people we're talking to in a lot of times don't share that very expansive and comprehensive interpretation of those words, environmental education. They see that as a much smaller, defined set of activities.
In the classroom.
So what should you think? What do you think would be better to say there? I'm just trying to get the context.
I understand better the context.
What do you think would be better? Yes. Go ahead.
Well, what I'm saying is that I don't have a specific edit, or else I would offer it. But what I am saying is that that definition from 1976 is very expansive. And I think the body of work in the conversation that's related to this is very expansive. But when you talk to the decision makers in school systems around the nation, they don't think about it like that. They see that as much smaller. And I think we would all agree that we want much more systematic, substantial education about the environment, but avoiding, it's kind of like what Changedale found when they started talking about environmental literacy, nobody knew what the hell you were talking about because they all thought something different. But if you said environmental know-how, they had an idea of how that would happen. It's really the two words together. Environmental education is where, I'm sorry, I'm just hung up here. And, you know, somebody's worked in this field for a long time. I hope you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jason Cervenac.
That's been a frustration for environmental educators for at least 4 or 5 decades that I know of.
Exactly.
So, Frank, is that the same situation? Do you think the words climate education, climate change education,
absolutely,
have the same issues?
Same problem.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Same problem. It's that unit in seventh grade at the end of after weather.
Yeah.
Box is checked, right? We're good. No, we're not. And I think that how we... I think you guys have done that in this report, but then we keep on falling back into the same space. That's what
This is Sarah, and I'm understanding what you're saying, but I think in the context of this report, we can demonstrate the kind of broad view of environmental education that we're after by using examples and lessons learned and best practices from the field, whether that's going deep on climate education or some other space, that go beyond that K-12 formal education or very narrow EE definition that that some people in the field are focused on. So, I mean, to me, I get it. In some ways, it's a semantics issue, but I think where we can go is using examples and case studies to kind of make the point that we're thinking about this as a much bigger thing than some people may realize.
Yeah.
I guess the question for me is whether you're talking about as Sarah just said, examples to embellish and bring reality to this report, or whether you're talking about saying we disagree with this report for these reasons.
A minority.
I think it's more the former.
Yeah.
Okay.
Productive. Yeah.
I don't disagree with the report. I think that if you're going to actually achieve the objective of a more environmental literate nation, I think we have to be very bold in the way we describe how that happens.
Yep.
We don't have a long time, guys.
So
we're talking a couple decades here.
So we actually just have a few more minutes in this call. So are there next steps that we want to sort of try to see happen with respect to this? I would, if you could share the document that you and Vicki were referring to earlier, and then maybe we can call for those who might be interested in having an ongoing conversation about how we might shape this addendum and what would be most useful. That might be a good way to move.
I think I would be more comfortable sharing it with a small writing team. I don't think I would.
Well,
what it is, it'd probably be better to share it with a small focus group for a purpose, as opposed to
okay.
a wide dissemination on public.
So, all right. So I will send an email out to the list asking for those who might be interested in participating. To let me know, and we'll see what we get. My guess is we'll get mostly people who are on the call this past 2 weeks, but we'll see what we get, and then we can move from there.
Yeah.
Tamara, I have a question for Patrick and Sarah. Is that all right?
Could you talk louder, please?
Yeah. This is a question for Patrick and Sarah. Are you comfortable with this direction? I mean, are you perceiving this as a friendly addendum? Is what I'm really getting at. Is that the intention?
Good question.
I mean, this is Sarah. I think if it's something that draws out some, key case studies, examples, best practices in climate education that complement this report, then absolutely.
Good.
And I think, the word there, the key word there, Sarah, is that complements. I think we want to expand here, and if we can improve with an addendum, that's great. But we want to be sure that it's complementary at the same time and not contradictory to the report. And I haven't heard anything that is contradictory to it. And keeping in line with what you all are trying to achieve through this working group and what we as an organization are trying to achieve. And we would be partnering on this, and so identifying and understanding those mutual goals and mutual benefits will be an important part of it to make sure that it aligns with what both of us are trying to do.
I think it might be important if one of the two of you or somebody from NEEF or maybe Vicki, somebody be part of the writing team so that any red flags will be recognized quickly if we were to, as we move forward with this.
Let me just tease.
You can think about that for
a
while. But that's a suggestion.
Maybe one way to frame the addendum that is. Go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, there was some. Anyways, it's a little choppy today.
Yeah.
One way to frame the addendum is I don't feel it would be right to only focus on climate. There are a lot of environmental issues that are urgent besides climate. The skills you need to be effective from an environmental perspective are complementary and transferable. So I'm thinking maybe the way of framing the addendum is about the urgency of this and the relevance of this. And there's a lot of good work on relevance in this, and I think that there's a lot of good work on the urgency aspect of this.
I don't completely agree with that. I think that framing it around climate and bringing those kinds of issues into the conversation, framing it just as a high level urgency issue, I don't think will distinguish it from the environmental literacy report. And of identifying it as climate and then bringing in the relevancy and the urgency pieces, I think would be important to include.
So, Tamara, what I'm thinking about is if you think of the planetary boundaries work and the why would school systems, museums, educational venues change their current programming to focus on the issues we're talking about and building the skills that we're seeing the need for, it's not just going to be climate that gets them there. But those skills are going to be very valuable. That's what I'm seeing. But if you look at this entire report, the only time the word urgency is used is in the context of climate. And I think that, you know, that there's, it's on page 71.
Yeah, this is kind of resonating with me where you're going, Frank, because how do I say this? NEEF folks, see what you think, but, you know, we've kind of approached environmental education over the years since the 70s in kind of a plodding, steady journey where we keep going, hey, folks, this is important. But the climate change issue does bump up the game quite a bit in terms of the word urgency. And so it is kind of a game changer to the usual approach. Would you react to that, Patrick and Sarah?
I think the urgency of the issue is certainly something to underscore. I don't see any issue with pulling climate out as a place to focus simply because it's a topic that's getting a considerable amount of attention in the education field and beyond. So I don't know that people outside of this space would necessarily think that it's odd that we pulled climate out as a place to go deeper. I'm also going to say I have another meeting right now, so I'm going to have to hop off.
Okay.
Thanks, Sarah.
So thanks for participating.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Sarah and I have the same meeting, so I have to jump off as well. But thank you
okay.
for the conversation.
So I'm going to also have to leave.
I think we're wrapping up.
So we'll. I'll send out an email to the list, and we'll continue this conversation.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Very
good. Thanks,
everybody.
To
everyone.
Bye.
Yes.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Thanks all.